You're listening to an archived version of the PDF Network call featuring special guest Katie Harbath, formerly of the National Republican Senatorial Committee on the subject, Beyond Text, Mobile Campaigning for 2012. The call was recorded on May 12, 2011, and is presented here in its entirety. For more information on the PDF Network and upcoming calls, please visit personaldemocracy.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Micha Sifri from Personal Democracy Forum. Welcome back to another of our ongoing PDF Network conference calls with movers, shakers, innovators, thinkers, and doers in the political technology space. As always, we are grateful to our sponsor, AT&T, for their ongoing support. This week, I'm very excited to have join us Katie Harbath, who's going to be talking to us about the latest in mobile campaigning. She is, until recently, was the chief digital strategist for the National Republican Senatorial Committee. She played that role in the 2010 election cycle, where she was in charge of all the committee's online efforts, including some cutting-edge work that they did with mobile, which we're going to be hearing about. I should add one or two personal notes. I first met Katie, I think it was back in either the fall of 2004 or early 2005. Andrew Richey and I went down to Washington and had a meeting with Mike Turk at the Republican National Committee. He had just come off running the e-campaign for the Bush-Cheney reelection, and he said, "You have to meet Mindy and Katie," who were then doing... correct me if I'm wrong. Was it called the Mindy and Katie Show?
It was called Off the Record with Mindy and Katie.
Right, Off the Record with Mindy and Katie. It was this innovative online video, if I remember.
Yeah.
You know, it was a foray very early into you know, kind of embracing the digital platform in a new way. This is 2005. This is like just as YouTube is literally. You know, being put together. If memory serves, you guys had a lot of fun with it, but the higher-ups didn't necessarily think it was serious enough for them or something.
Correct, yes.
But Katie has gone on to, you know, work on a number of major national campaigns, and she's now with Facebook, which is itself an interesting story, but not the main subject of the call. But maybe if we have a little time at the end, I'll ask you to just tell us what you're up to. But as always, a reminder to folks listening, the first part of the call will be me and Katie talking, and then about halfway through I will invite you to ask questions. So thanks for listening. If you have comments or questions that you want to share, you can also use Twitter. We'll be following the hashtag PDF Network. So, Katie... welcome aboard. You know, give us some background. I mean, talk about where you see mobile and how, you know, what you learned in the course of 2010, you know, some of the lessons of starting to tap into the fact that most of us carry this connection device in our pockets. What kinds of opportunities are you seeing for political engagement and mobilization?
Sure. So last cycle, I was the chief digital strategist at the National Republican Senatorial Committee. And for those of you who don't know, that sort of, it's the committee that focuses on helping get Republicans elected just to the Senate. So we only focus on the Senate. We're not like the RNC where we sort of focus on all of the races. And, initially, our first foray into mobile was building an iPhone app for the committee. We launched that in May of 2010, and the big goal was really to give people a way to watch all of our YouTube videos we were doing and get information on the candidates in their state in a very easy manner. And so we launched that. We were the first committee to do so of either side to have one. And we found most people wanting to use it, you know, to find out more about candidates. So if you logged in from California, you would get the California information right away, but you always had access to the other ones. But where mobile really, so I knew that was important and I wanted to sort of see, get it built and start seeing how people would use it. What I really had the big wake-up call was probably right after that in about June, I was looking at my Google Analytics and they have the advanced segments. And I was like, I'm kind of curious to see what sort of mobile traffic we're getting. And I was shocked at how, you know, it wasn't huge. It was 5 to 7%. But what really struck me was that that number had doubled over the course of a few months. So clearly more and more people were coming to us via mobile. So then I happened to look at the Google ads we were running because I hadn't been separating them out by mobile ads and desktop ads and found that a large chunk of our clicks were coming from mobile devices. So that's when I started to we built a mobile-friendly version of the website, started splitting out our Google ad campaigns. So that way we were doing separate ones for mobile and that we were also doing, like, display ads, images, rather than text on mobile. And, you know, was sort of following along with that data, and I had a theory on election day that more people were going to be looking for where to vote on their phone than they were on a computer. Because it'd be one of those things where you're running around throughout the day, you're probably like, oh my gosh, that's right, I have to vote. Where's my polling place? So we ran, we tested ads, both mobile and desktop, for keywords around finding your polling place. And we had a mobile-friendly version of our site using Google's polling place map. And then we also had a desktop version. And we found that 10% of the traffic to our site on Election Day was mobile. Those mobile ads were 39% more cheaper and had about 6% higher click-through rates, I want to say. But let me find the exact numbers. I'm blanking. Oh, I'm sorry. 39% cheaper and had 52% of all the clicks versus 48% of clicks from the desktop ads.
Great. Let me ask you to clarify something, because I assume some of the people who are listening are wondering this very question, too. You're talking about ads on mobile. You're talking about ads that are running that where people are opening up a web browser and searching on their web browser on their phone, or are you talking about ads that are either on a particular app or if you're working, say, with Verizon, you know, inside their content network where they're offering people opportunities to place ads? Like where would somebody typically encounter political ads on their phone?
It's a combo of both of those. It is when you search for if you happen to pull up a browser and search in Google, they have specific ads that can be targeted to mobile devices. But then also sometimes if you're using different iPhone apps or Android apps, you will see you may see small banner ads show up in either the bottom or the top of that app. So you can buy those. And then also, too, Google on their network. And, you know,
sorry, Katie, we lost you there for a second. Say that again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We just lost you for a second. You wouldn't happen to be calling us on a mobile phone, would you?
No, I am on a regular phone.
Okay. All right. You faded out for a second. Go ahead.
I apologize.
So banner ads inside apps.
Inside apps, right. And then also too, if you're going to a website that maybe isn't mobile friendly, but you're clicking on ads in there or seeing them. So if you go to you know, Real Clear Politics, I think they don't have a mobile version of their site, so you're just seeing the full size site. You're still seeing some of the display ads they have there too.
Right, but those ads actually weren't bought for mobile, right? You're actually just seeing the ad that you placed on that site.
That's true, but Google will tell
you're discovering, right? The analytics is telling you that a person clicked through from a mobile device.
Yeah.
Is what you? Yeah. So, and I'm. Let's drill down a little bit further. Are there what sorts of places, without giving away trade secrets, what sorts of places would you say are the best places to put political ads on a phone? Is it news sites? Is it top political blogs? You know, is it the sport, you know, the ESPN? What sorts of things were you looking at, and where did you get the most traction?
I think the Google search was probably our biggest because people were searching for information there. And then I think second, it was news sites that we were seeing the most traction from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the thing you were mostly trying to do with these ads were just get information about a candidate in front of people? I mean, what were the purposes of the ads?
Sure. It was we tried a combination of sort of getting email addresses, because at the senatorial committee we couldn't put candidates' names right in the ads because this wasn't under independent expenditure money.
Uh-huh.
We were spending some coordinated money, but you still have to fall within the bounds of what the FEC allows you to do as a committee. But so most of it was sort of just generic NRSC ads, help elect Republicans, defeat Democrat type of ads. We started off trying to do testing ones to get email signups and email signups, just generic traffic to our site. We tried donate ones. They didn't work out that well. And then the biggest push we did was the find your polling place ones towards the end. And to be honest with you, my biggest goal for these ads was just to get benchmarks and sort of figure out what people were doing with them, because there was no, to my knowledge, there's no real background knowledge from anybody who had really done these before of how people would react to political ads on mobile. So for me, it was a lot of a fact-finding mission so that we could start having people, you know, as they're doing these more and more, and especially looking towards 2012, they would at least have something, some sort of benchmarks to look at when they're doing their own campaigns.
Right. One more question. And were these ads, were you able to geo-target so that if the user, and I'm kind of curious how geo-targeting works on mobile phones. Is it by the phone number or by the IP address?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check on with Google's things. I believe it's by IP address, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm. So if I happen to have a 917 number on my phone, which corresponds to Manhattan, but I'm in California, I would have seen the California targeted ads.
Yeah, because I know in our iPhone app, it was dependent upon what state you were in, not necessarily
mm-hmm.
where your phone number was. So when I was in California, I'd get California info. When I was in Mississippi, I would get Mississippi info.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And did you also do stuff with, you know, trying to collect people's cell phone numbers, and then did you try and do some more push directly through text messaging? I mean, what kind of stuff?
We did have a text messaging program. It had only a couple of thousand numbers on it. To be honest mm-hmm. with you, towards the end, what I found to be more successful was actually doing pushes with our iPhone app. We had more mm-hmm. people who were signed up for our app than they were for the text messages. And then with the iPhone app, especially on election day, you can push silent updates. So it still pops up, you know, if they've accepted the notifications, it still pops up on their phone just as a text message would. But I didn't have to worry that at 11 o'clock at night, I might be waking some people up with the ding of a text message when they came through. So I was still able to send election updates, but not worry about being too intrusive on people that at that late of an hour.
Mm-hmm. Did you do anything with engagement, such as offering, and it's sort of two steps removed, right? I mean, because I mean, other campaigns have done things where, you know, you can actually download a walk list or upload information back through the phone about the results of knocking on doors. Obviously, that wasn't the purpose of your iPhone app because you were working to just generically support senatorial candidates across the board, right?
Yeah, the senatorial committee doesn't do any of the get out the vote stuff, so we didn't have that. We did try doing, though, I was sort of calling it the virtual campaign tracker. So you know how all the campaigns have people who follow their opponents around with a video camera to try to see if they'll say anything. And we had built into the app, it was probably a little too late, but where people could send us photo and video and take it within the app and then send it to us and put it up on a – we had a YouTube and Flickr account set up to gather some of that information, which I think part of the problem was a lot of people don't know who the senatorial committee is outside of D.C. So it was a little hard to get traction, but I think that the idea is one that could really be utilized, especially by a campaign or perhaps a larger committee like the RNC, where they are doing a lot more work with volunteers and voters and get out the vote type of stuff.
That's very interesting. Why don't we – let's pull back a little. So what do you see – I mean, A, did you see anything else that anybody else was doing that was interesting in 2010 that you wished – damn, I wish I had thought of that. And secondly, what do you see developing as we head into 2012? What's getting you excited or intrigued?
So one of my favorite examples is I think the Scott Brown campaign did an excellent job using mobile in their special election in January of 2010 for Senator Kennedy's for the seat after he died. And they would use – I think they had the most brilliant use of text messaging in that they not only used it to – they put that on all of their lawn yard signs rather than their URL because in their mind they're like, they can Google us to find our website. But maybe we can get them to join our text messaging list as they're driving by and see these signs. And then what they would do is anytime Martha Coakley was on a radio show that had call-in, right when she would get on, they would send a text saying, call this number, Martha Coakley's on, ask her about X, Y, and Z. And she would be flooded by questions that she probably didn't want to answer. On this radio show. So I think that's a really great use of text messaging that I hadn't seen people do before. And then as they got close to Election Day, they were ones that offered walk lists. You could even do calling, you know, calling volunteer – or, sorry, get out the vote calls.
We actually I don't mean to cut you off, but we – Rob Willington, who was the guy who did a lot of that stuff with the campaign, we did a call with him, I think, a month later. Actually, and it's in our archives if people listening want to go back and look for more details on that. There's no question they did. When you're working at that level where you're, like, in direct contact with the volunteers who are going to do stuff or who might do stuff on behalf of a specific candidate, I totally agree with you. I think they were doing many cutting-edge things. Are there others that you now, as we, you know, we've been through a couple of additional races, or as you see things in the space develop? I mean, mobile, you know, I think we're all still trying to figure it out and understand it better. I mean, there's the mobile real-time information world also, which is which we swim in thanks to Twitter. But you know, to what degree do you see the activists? You know, party activists really plugging in and you know, using this as a primary tool for connecting. And who are the kind of people who you're reaching when you do this?
I don't think it'll ever become the primary tool. I think it will become a large part. I think the big thing is that people need to get away from thinking of mobile just as text messaging. And realize that they're doing everything from reading emails. I mean, we have people making donations off of mobile devices. They're sharing information on social networks like Facebook and Twitter. They're taking pictures. They're taking video. It just allows for a much more on-the-go experience, and I think campaigns too much are still like, well, text messaging doesn't raise us money. We don't need to be doing mobile. And they're not thinking about it in the sort of bigger picture. I was, to be honest, a little disappointed at how little I saw campaigns sort of really utilizing it last cycle. Some did have, you know, some had apps where it was just, you know, basic news off of their website. Some were using it for GeoTV, but you didn't see the sort of level of excitement that you did, you know, even in 2008 with, you know, President Obama using the text messaging in their campaign. You didn't see that sort of level. It sort of, I think, slipped back a little bit. And going forward, I think that, you know, I really liked, I, you know, unfortunately for me being a Republican, but really appreciated David Axelrod's comments to Mike Allen, I think it was a month or so ago, sort of talking through what he, how he was thinking about the campaign, and mentioned that, you know, a big emphasis on smartphones and how people are using their phones so much more for communicating. And you had asked, you know, what sort of people are you reaching? I think it's becoming all ages. It's not, you're not only, you can look at groups like Hispanics that most of them use their mobile phone more than, more than they even use a computer. But you also have, you know, the younger generation, and then you have my mom's generation that I love to use. I mean, she now has an iPad, and that's the only computing device that she uses. Her friends have iPhones, and they don't necessarily have computers. They're doing it all on their mobile device. So I think
and
that
the fact that some people can't be reached through a regular landline phone anymore.
Yeah, I mean, my parents don't have even broadband because they're out in the country in Wisconsin. So even when I'm home, it's mostly things done on the cell phone connection because that's just better than the best type of connection that we have.
So do you think that the national parties or the national campaigns, I mean, obviously the Obama campaign starts with I think a bit of a technological edge in a variety of ways, and you know, the other campaigns are still in the process of staffing up and raising money. But you know, you were, well, you left the party fold a little while ago, but you know, I presume you saw and probably were advocating for efforts to get people more in tune with this for 2012. So can you give us a window into that, or is it still an uphill fight to convince people?
I don't think it's a it's a little bit of an uphill fight. I think that it's people understand that it more and more. They understand it's important and they need it. They just don't. I think what's sort of disappointing, and I'm always fighting for a lot with any of the Republicans that I talk to, is the need for more testing and to not just go by what your gut says you think should be right. And I think that's a big thing that the Obama campaign taught us in 2008 and really was, you know, a huge edge for them. And, you know, me last cycle at the NRSC, most of my time was spent testing. I mean, we tested over 200 different donation pages to try to find that right combination that would work. And so I think a lot of people, it's sort of hard, you know, you're talking to them, they're not necessarily looking at the numbers, and they're not necessarily looking at it big picture, and they're not quite sure where to start. And it is hard right now for the Republican campaigns because you have to launch an exploratory committee to even get money to be able to pay to build a website and have a mobile experience. And it's sort of, you know, right now it's a question of, you know, where should our priorities be? Should it be building a website? Should it be building up our social media? Should it be, you know, testing different donation pages? And even, too, just staffing. Who can we find to sort of be embedded in the campaign and be living and breathing this for the next year versus, you know, not to knock vendors, but they're not in the room on a constant basis sort of hearing what's going on and being able to be like, hey, did you ever think about doing a mobile aspect to that, about doing, you know, some sort of social aspect to that, just any sort of online aspect to what they're thinking. So I think that a lot of campaigns are still sort of struggling with figuring out what the best structure is for them.
Right. But if you had to boil it down, I mean, let's say you were, you know, somebody listening on this call is actually the campaign manager for a state-level campaign or a congressional race. Are there some simple things that people should do? I mean, that, like, what, if you don't have a big budget, but these are the, like, the basic best practices, right?
Yep.
Like, make sure you have a mobile version of your campaign website. Would that be number one, or what would
be
your...
Yeah, I think that would definitely be number one, is just look at go right now on your iPhone or your Droid or whatever smartphone you have, and go to your candidate's website and see what it looks like. And at the bare minimum, have a mobile version so when people are seeing it. Also, the emails you're sending out to your list, see what those look like on a phone. Because you want a lot more people are reading their email on a phone these days, and if they can't read it easily, they're not going to. They're not going to take the time to sort of scroll in. So if there were only two things that you did mobily, it would be those two. And then I guess actually I'm going to add a third. Go to your Google Analytics, which is what I'm presuming most people are using at a lower level campaign. Go to your Google Analytics and take a look at the advanced segment for mobile. And just see what folks are doing and where they're going on your site with a mobile device.
That's great advice. Very, very. Unfortunately, I don't think we've done any of those for Tech President.
Well, and one thing, too, I want to point out, if people are interested and didn't see, Pew put out a study right before Christmas called Politics Goes Mobile. And they found that last cycle, 26% of people used their cell phones to learn about or participate in the midterm elections. And that's a midterm race. So you can only imagine for a presidential how much more that's going to, how much bigger of a number that's going to be.
Very interesting. Well, and I should mention at this point, we're nearing the midpoint of the call, that people who are listening, if you have a question or a comment or clarification you would like to introduce into the conversation, feel free to hit *6, and that will get you into the call queue. And I should also mention that Katie is going to be joining. We are going to have a breakout panel at Personal Democracy Forum next month on the politics of mobile, which will kind of look at both the stuff that we're talking about here, as well as look at how people are using mobile for advocacy in outside the U.S., where in many cases they have higher levels of mobile usage than we have here. And we'll also be looking at some of the issues that the particular platforms, whether it's the Apple operating system or the Android or Windows, what are the sorts of issues that they raise about how open or closed and, you know, what sorts of restrictions or allowances they make for people who are building apps to run on those phones. So there's a little advertisement for Personal Democracy Forum next month. So, Katie, when you are – I mean, is this still a case of you know, where we were maybe a few years ago with even trying to get campaigns to pay attention to stuff like blogging or video? I mean, are, you know, as you said, they just imagine that it's just texting. They haven't had their sort of wake-up moment. What will it take them to be, you know, to really wake up to the opportunities? Is it that people just have to see that they can raise money? Is that what it comes down to?
Unfortunately, I do think that's still a big thing. I think the money as well as the volunteer type of stuff. And to be honest with you, I think the wake-up moment isn't necessarily going to come from something that a campaign does. It's going to be something where users, they're on their own to accomplish something that has to do with the elections.
What do you mean by that?
Where they, so, you know, take a look at, you know, the Tea Party from last cycle. There wasn't really, there wasn't one organization that it was like top-down trying to make this happen. It was very much a sort of grassroots type of organization that really used, you know, the web, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, to sort of organize themselves and really become a huge force. And I think, you know, it might be the Tea Party. It might be, you know, it might be folks on the left. It could be a combination. You know, you don't really know. But is it going to be somebody who just gets so frustrated with both sides and decides that they're going to start supporting some independent candidate, and they're, you know, they're using a combination of, you know, while they're on the ground, you know, running around with this person, you know, sending photos, helping to sort of be a volunteer advocate for this person. And it could be a combination of, you know, really mobile and mobile and just desktop stuff that they're doing, but, you know, that could be a way of bringing people together. I think another example, and I guess this one would be within a campaign, but I imagine that we're going to start having more, or I'd like to see more communicate, you know, press secretaries, the traveling press secretaries, rather than, you know, if a commercial comes out or that the campaign needs to respond to or something happens, rather than stopping the campaign bus and having to, you know, pull all the media together so they can do a statement, that comms person should be able to just pull out their phone, do a video, and tweet it out or put it up on Facebook and never even have to stop the press. So will you start to see candidates doing those types of responses on the fly with video as stories are happening throughout a day?
I pity the poor reporters who are already, from what I can tell from talking to them, drowning in updates, messages that they have to read on their phone, and conference calls that they have to listen in on all day long, and then somehow they're actually also supposed to file. But I do agree. I mean, I think you're right that in some ways the bottom-up element to mobile in campaigns is already vibrant. I mean, that there's, whether it's activists who use tools like Twitter to network in real time and, you know, do a flash mob, or, you know, I mean, it's great when a campaign sort of consciously plans and says, we're going to let people know to call into a radio show, but there's nothing to prevent you know, volunteers from doing that too. They simply just have to network, and, you know, build, you know, hashtags are a great tool for that. The cumulative effect, though, we still don't fully understand, because we are, I think we're moving into a cycle where all this real-time communication and networking is going to be on steroids. It's going to be, you know, both sides doing it, not just one side. More people, you know, all trying to be heard at the same time could turn into a blizzard, if you will, of efforts.
And that's where I think, Mika, and it'll be interesting to see the social aspect of people being able to, so you can already sort of integrate Facebook in with mobile. You know, I have to imagine in the next, you know, 2 years, by the time November 2012 comes around, that will, you know, that will have evolved even more. You know, are people starting to think of, you know, because you're right, they're going to be hit with so many messages. Is there a way for them to take all those messages and sort of help boil it down into, these are what my friends are saying, and make the conversation a lot more manageable than just trying to deal with everybody in the country having these types of conversations on Twitter, on Facebook, on blogs, et cetera. And so I really think, I've been telling everybody, I think the next election is going to be social and mobile. And I think when you can kind of combo the two together, I think that could be, you know, the campaign or, you know, committee or whoever it is that sort of figures that little bullet out and really makes it work, I think could see themselves having some really good success in the next year and a half.
Next campaign will be social and mobile. I'm just writing that down. But before I follow up and ask you about it, it's a great quote. I'm just going to invite people again. We have a bashful group of listeners today. Don't be bashful, folks. If you have a question, just hit *6, clear your throat. If not, I'm perfectly good at continuing to ask questions, but we have people listening who are known to ask good questions, so I'm going to give them a second. All right. I see a call coming in. I see two calls coming in. All right. First call. You're on. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, can you speak up a little bit?
I can. So my question is, what's the biggest mistake that you see people making when they first start out doing mobile?
I think it's they just think it's text messaging, and so they're not, and they're only sending out like press release type statements out over the text messaging, and not not really thinking of engaging with people. And then the second one would be not having mobile-friendly versions of their site for people to easily access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Caller, would you just mind identifying yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Natalie Liebuck with Wagner Edstrom.
Cool. Do you have a follow-up, or shall I go to the next question?
No, go ahead and go to the next question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Our next caller is that Rich Robbins.
It is, yes. Hey, Mika. Two-part question. I apologize. I got called away for a few minutes. I might have missed you saying this, and also don't want you to give away trade secrets, but two parts. One is, do you have any specific tactics or vendors that you really like and that you find are really effective? And a somewhat similar question is, in terms of buying mobile advertising, what ad networks do you use, and what do you find has been most effective at buying advertising on mobile?
Sure. So on the vendor front, the ones that built our NRSC iPhone app that I loved was a firm out of Kansas called MTB. So M as in Mary, T as in Tom, B as in Boy, Mobile. They have a whole series of sort of offerings, everything from a very, you know, very simple basic app to something more complex like I had. And I just found them to be very easy to work with and always sort of helping us push the envelope with the app. I also know some campaigns were using ones with somebody called Purple Forge. Unfortunately, I don't know many on the Democrat side, but those were two on the Republican side that I liked. And then our text messaging was done by a company called ARX Mobile, which used to be Distributive Networks, which used to be something called Tusk Mobile, kind of has evolved throughout time. But they were our text messaging vendor. And then, I'm sorry, remind me on the second part. Oh, the ad networks.
Yeah.
Honestly, I only used Google to do mobile ads last cycle. I was pitched to do mobile with, you know, some specific news sites. However, the cost, I didn't have tons of money to play with at the NRSC, and the rule was sort of, as long as I was raising it, I could spend it. But oftentimes they wanted, you know, minimums that were like $25,000 to run mobile ads just on their specific news site. And I honestly felt that I could better spend that money on Google.
Yeah, I want to just follow up on that one. And do the big providers themselves, like Verizon, for example, which has a lot of content that they try and get their own subscribers, you know, to use. Did you experiment with any of that, or you just looked at it and said, I'm just going to stick with Google, it's the best deal?
I honestly didn't look at it too much. A lot of this happened the last 3 months of the campaign, and I was the only person at the NRSC doing everything digital. So part of it also was, you know, mobile was a priority for me, but it wasn't the only one. I would say sort of our A/B testing and just our Google ads, all of our advertising in general, was sort of where I was really focused the last 3 months. But it was something, and honestly something, if I were at a campaign this cycle, what I would love to start trying is testing different mobile landing pages. And seeing how people interacted with them so that I could start to get a better picture of how people actually use these sites.
Very interesting. I have another call. Looks like it's Jennifer Just.
Yeah, hi. This is a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much. One suggestion to me was doing Facebook ads. Did you use Facebook ads? And that seems like it also would combine social and mobile.
Not for mobile yet. Facebook doesn't have mobile ads yet.
Okay.
But it's something that we've been hearing a lot, and we've been sharing a lot with Palo Alto, but there aren't Facebook mobile ads yet. So for Facebook, it was more of the organic sharing and posting type of options that they already have.
Well, let's unpack that a tiny bit. So if I'm using a Facebook app on my smartphone, it does not display any advertising right now?
Correct, yes.
Okay, and if I'm on a website that has Facebook Connect, and so I like something, that does register from my mobile, but it's That's obviously not advertising, right? That's just organic.
Yeah, and with our and with the NRSC app, every single bit of content had a little box that would pop up asking people to share it, and they could share it via email, Twitter, Facebook, or text message with their friends.
And people typically do what at that moment? What I'm hearing is they probably don't text message content.
No, it was it was Facebook and Twitter. They weren't really even emailing anymore.
Jennifer, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you for your question. So I'm back to something you just said before, which was the next campaign will be social and mobile, and I want you to sort of expand on that thought a little bit. It's a nice, clean, bold statement. What do you mean?
So I think that it's going to be I think they're partially, you know, comboed together, but also it's my feeling of a campaign needing to be integrated in a bunch of different methods of which people get their information throughout a day. Because people aren't just simply watching the local news. They're not just going to Facebook. They're not just going to Twitter. And they're not just reading their email, and they're not just doing it on a desktop. They're doing it on their phone, their iPad. Like, a lot of people have multiple devices now in which they're getting information. So I think that on the mobile front, a campaign needs to be thinking about how is the content that we're putting out and how are we engaging with people and how are they using their phones in which to do that, and are we making that experience a good one for them? And then also on the social aspect, are we giving people social context to everything they do? When they make a donation, does the thank you page ask them to use, for instance, you know, Facebook has a social channel where you can choose to send a request to your friends on Facebook. Does a donation thank you page have something like that so you can ask your friends to donate? When you ask somebody to, as simple as having a like button on your site so you can see what other friends are doing, are you encouraging people? You know, are they tweeting stuff out and sending traffic back to your site? Are you using Facebook social plugins so that the interaction happening, whether it's on your iPhone app or your smartphone app, on your website, on Facebook, on Twitter, is it all integrated so that way if somebody is on their iPhone and shares it, it goes to their Facebook wall where their friend on a desktop sees it and then decides to share it on Facebook but also tweet it out? And then are they clicking on that link and going to your – oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's good. I get the picture, and I think you're right, but I want to try to push back a little bit in two ways, just because I think it will actually strengthen the idea. What about the argument that actually all those things, right, the sharing and the peer-to-peer, you know, word-of-mouth influencing and all of that, that stuff works best when people – really want to share something. They're really excited about the candidate or the cause. And best examples in recent times, you could take the Obama campaign and look at how his online base grew itself for a while, right? That, you know, the MySpace page and the Facebook page, those things were started before he even was running and had, you know, several hundred thousand people on them, and then the campaign stepped in, and, you know, the rest is history, somewhat messy history, but, or the Scott Brown thing where you saw the right roots across the country rally, you know, to this upstart, you know, nobody was supposed to take the Kennedy seat away from the Democrats, right?
Yep.
And that mushroomed very quickly, but in both cases, what you have is this level of grassroots enthusiasm. Like, you can't make me share something that I'm not excited about. And right now, I would make the argument to you that neither side seems to have this big wave of excitement happening for their candidates, so that the next campaign is actually going to be about something harder, which is,
well, I think
how well do you optimize data?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so you know the argument. So optimizing data is about look, we've got to test and we've got to, you know, figure out how, what messages work best, and we have to pay very close attention to the ability to tap into the social graph and all the things that are like all these amazing new tools, but that in many ways, I think both sides, at least right now, seem to be in a position where the grassroots enthusiasm, you know, the stuff that it's like, it's great when that energy is flowing because it makes everybody's jobs easier, but is there really enough of it that the social thing will happen on its own? Right? And I think you're making the premise of what you're saying is, look what happens when people are excited, they share. But what if they're not excited?
I would start with, I guess I should have started my entire premise with all this, that if a campaign doesn't have a good message and isn't already getting people excited, none of these tools matter.
Yes.
I think you have to have that first. There's not a silver bullet of I'm going to have a mobile website and that's going to win me the election. I think it's, you know, really got to, you know, if you don't have that sort of messaging, and you look at 2008, John McCain had a website, John McCain was using social, John McCain, you know, had a lot of this stuff, but the message wasn't as, you know, wasn't hitting people as well as yes we can, and, you know, President and the messaging that President Obama and the Democrats had. In 2010, it was, you know, the Tea Partier sort of message was the one that was getting them really excited and getting them out to go and vote. It wasn't just because they had, you know, they were organizing on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it was. So all of these things are tools that are meant to help amplify that message. And I 100% agree with you that it is also about data, but I also believe that in order for data, good data to be effective, you have to have the foundational stuff working too. And so you have to have, are you ready for when, if people, you know, when people do get excited, are you ready for them to easily share your content, see what their friends are doing, et cetera? And I think data and social sort of, you know, they help mirror one another, because if you find that one friend who shares something on Facebook, on average, they have 130 friends who saw that. So the reach of one person sharing something is bigger than just them seeing it. It's all their friends seeing it. And then, you know, if their friends do it, et cetera, et cetera. So I think all of those are going to be extremely important in the campaign, and the campaigns that will do the best are ones that are able to have sort of the foundational stuff ready to go and then are really using data and testing and looking at who, you know, who their potential supporters might be and giving them the easy way, you know, trying, you know, having a good message and then really giving them an easy way to be advocates for them and recommending that candidate to their friends, and then sort of starting that circular marketing cycle all over again.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't disagree at all with that. Other people who are listening in who might have a question, I'm going to take a pause here and see if anyone else wants to chime in and ask a question. We're coming up on the last 10 minutes of the call, so I want to just make sure I don't completely dominate anyone. Don't be bashful. Well, while I'm waiting to see if anyone does want to chime in again, we have a few minutes. What are you doing at Facebook? Tell us a little bit about what that's like, what your role is, and, you know, for folks in the PDF world who want to interact with Facebook, what should they be calling you?
I'm on my third month. Many of you might know my colleague Adam Connor here, who started the DC office. He and I now are sort of tag teaming the role of, I like to call it the Facebook evangelist, sort of really helping to train folks in all the different Facebook tools that are out there, how they might use them, helping them with things such as how do you create, you know, another tab on your Facebook page, how do you, you know, what some of our new tools are out there, how do you, you know, you do the self-serve ads. So sort of it's part evangelist and part customer service, and then I would say part training and education too. And I'm focusing – I'm helping folks on all sides, but I am particularly focusing on the Republican side just because that's where my background's from, and Adam has more of the Democrat background, so he is sort of handling all of that. But it's going really great now. I really enjoy it because I'm still able to be working in the political arena, but also getting a completely different perspective by now working at a tech company and sort of the thinking that a company like this does. And why engineers in Palo Alto, how they think, because it's completely different than how somebody, you know, in Washington, D.C. necessarily thinks about using technology. And my big hope is to take some of that thinking, the out-of-the-box thinking and new things that we're trying to push and thinking about how can I help people bring that to a political or government level.
Mm-hmm. So your primary customers are on Capitol Hill, or are you also working with advocacy groups and folks outside of the Beltway?
Folks outside of the Beltway, too. So it's anybody from Hill, not just national campaigns, but state legislators. One of the first presentations I did was small business training near our data center in North Carolina. And also advocacy groups, public affairs groups, grassroots groups, pretty much sort of anybody that falls within that Washington, the political advocacy realm.
And what do you think the biggest sort of nervousness that people have to get over when you talk to them? What's like the biggest fear that people have about embracing Facebook and using it? Is it I don't have the time? Is it I don't want to share that kind of stuff? I mean, what do you find are the primary obstacles?
There is a little bit of the time issue, and a lot of it is they want to have engagement with people on their page, but when there's, you know, hundreds of people commenting, how do you keep up with that, and how do you balance the need and wanting to engage with your fans, but also acknowledging you're not going to be able to necessarily engage with everybody one-on-one. And I think offices are getting more and more used to that, especially when you see members like Senator John Cornyn, who does it, you know, Facebooks and tweets himself. And when he has the time, he'll sometimes, you know, engage with conversation with people back and forth, but he can't necessarily do it all the time. And I think that his followers have sort of, they understand that because nobody has time to spend, you know, nobody spends all day necessarily on Facebook and Twitter following this. So what I've been encouraging folks is that the engagement is good and that, you know, to not worry about, yes, there will be people who disagree with you, but they disagreed with you before you even had a Facebook page or a Twitter account. This now gives you the opportunity to know that they do and to perhaps have an opportunity to change their mind.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to actually ask you a variation on the question. And I'm going to actually, this isn't the easiest question. What about Facebook analytics? I mean, from the point of view of a campaign strategist, does Facebook give enough information back to campaigns about, you know, who's coming to their site on Facebook, who's liking, who's, you know, engagement there is a different thing than engagement through the website that the campaign runs, right?
Yes.
So where do things stand with that, and are there, should we expect some improvements?
We have two Insights products now, which I've sort of been hearing a lot of people don't know about both, but we not only have the Insights just for your page, but we also have Domain Insights. So that will tell you what content people are liking if you have our social plugins on your site, but it will also help show organic sharing. So if they are cutting and pasting a link from your site and putting it on Facebook, you could sort of see those numbers. With the Insights, we don't show you individual user information in what, you know, you can't see, you know, if I, Katie Harbath, like a, you know, like Mitt Romney,
right,
the Mitt Romney campaign can't see what I'm doing. But they can, you know, in an aggregate level, you can see how many impressions a post has gotten, sort of what your feedback percentage is, sort of engagement rates. And if you're using our ads platform too, we just launched a new one last week. Yes, last week, that has some improved graphs and data, including now, I can't remember the exact date ranges. I want to say if somebody saw your Facebook ad, and I want to say within either a week or 21 days, they come back to either your website or Facebook and take some sort of action, so liking a post or, using one of our social plugins, will tell you that number. So that way now with ads, even if they didn't click on it, perhaps you can see down the line if it caused them to, you know, if they eventually came back to the site and took some sort of action. But we're always – oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to say one thing I've discovered about Facebook is I've been working here now for 2.5 months. We're launching new things every single week, and I think everything that we're doing is a living and breathing thing that's looking to be improved on. So I have no idea where we'll be in 2 years with our insights and stuff like that, but I know it's a lot of that is requests that we're getting, and we're certainly passing on to the engineers who are in charge with those tools, because it's not just political folks who want to know that, marketing folks, and every industry does.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating and fast moving, and absolutely will be very, very influential in the cycle as it heats up. I personally have been getting more interested also in what happens when a campaign builds a Facebook app, which actually then explicitly asks a supporter for permission to access a lot more information that is very granular, right? So while the generic analytics don't give you that kind of information, if somebody has downloaded and installed that app on their Facebook page because they're a supporter, now the campaign has the ability to peer into their whole social graph and do a variety of things that I suspect will be extremely interesting as we go into 2012 and, see what's possible. It's completely virgin territory. So maybe we'll check back with you. At that point, we'll have you and Adam on for a sort of a very focused call about Facebook and politics. I think that would be really fun.
Sounds good.
Good. Well, thank you, Katie, for taking the time. And thanks, everybody, for listening. This call, as you know, will be turned into a podcast and made available as well on personaldemocracy.com archive section for the PDF network. Right now, these calls are open and free, so you should tell other folks about them. We'll be posting our schedule for the summer shortly, but I should mention that 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing a call with our very own Nancy Scola, the associate editor of Tech President, on the Internet's future and whether it will continue to be free, which is something that we shouldn't take for granted, and I'm looking forward to that conversation a great deal. As always, thanks to AT&T, our ongoing sponsor for these calls, for supporting them. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Katie. I appreciate you taking the time. And we'll see you at PDF. And for those of you who are listening who are also planning to come to PDF, come say hello. We'll see you there. And until then, we'll see you online.